Hello and welcome to the Keeper Cut Podcast. Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. Happy belated Father's Day to all the fathers listening, I guess, since you'll be listening on Monday. Father's Day will be over and you'll back to being a second-class parent who just has to put up with whatever the rest of the family tells you to do. But today, it's Sunday for us as we're recording. So I hope that as we're recording, you are all enjoying basking in the love of your family until they just go back to expecting things of you. So, it's getting into, you know, we talked about Pete last week before that, like, hey, it's getting time to like make decisions on who's real, who's not, what's going on with, you know, is it time to make trades? And trades have been blowing up in some of my leagues since then. I don't know if it's been the same for you. It feels like the dam broke on that and everything's flooding in now.
Yeah, a little bit. I think some of it has to do with recent injuries. Like, I'm inching closer to selling due to all the injuries to my pitching in a few leagues. The listener league being one of them, the Cole Reagan stuff. It just doesn't sound good. Second opinion coming on his shoulder. He had diminished velocity for the last year now, and the results have been bad this year. And things like that just make the decision to sell a little bit easier. Plus, we're 2.5 months in. It's June 15th, right? So, now is like the time to really maximize the trade value on those guys who might not be worth keeping because they're too expensive, but someone can have them long enough to potentially win their league. So now's a kind of a sweet spot in time to make some moves if you're a seller.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I also think, like, as a buyer, people tend to wait, right? You want to like, oh, what do I need? Maybe this guy will break out. I don't want to sell these prospects too early. But the earlier you buy, the more value you get. And it depends a little bit on league structure, but, like, you know, major league teams will often wait until close to the trade deadline to make things happen. But major league teams are in a different situation than most fantasy teams, right? Where if you're the Tigers, right? The Tigers probably should be, the Tigers should be buyers for sure. They probably have multiple things they could or should buy. But the Tigers are also they're pretty much locked into a playoff spot at this point. Obviously, nothing is 100% given, but they're running away with the division. They're in a great spot, even if they fall back to a wild card. Like, they're in a great position. There isn't actually a ton of reason for them. So, like, right now, they have a 97.7% chance of making the playoffs, to the Tigers, according to Fangraphs. The Yankees at 98.1% are the only, and the Dodgers at 98.4. Those are the three teams over 97%. Those teams, even if they need to buy, they're buying for the playoffs, right? They're not buying at this point to make the playoffs. And so having a guy now versus July or versus August or whatever, like, it doesn't matter. So they are in a good position to, like, wait and see and make sure that, like, before they spend their prospect capital on a reliever that they think they need, that they don't have, like, a starting pitcher get injured or something like that suddenly becomes a bigger priority, or that somebody breaks out and makes that not a priority for them. Teams that are lower down in the playoff rate, like, you know, I'm looking at your Red Sox, my Guardians. Your Red Sox 29.8%, my Guardians 30.1%. If either of those teams have realistic hopes of making the playoffs, they should be buying now, because the next 2 months or month and a half of having those guys on their roster could add two or three wins over that time, right? You're like, anything can happen, and you need that. You need those wins to get into the playoffs. In your fantasy leagues, if you're playing Roto, you're playing a season long points league, it's the same situation as the Red Sox and Guardians are in. Nothing is granted. You're not just trying to get into the playoffs. You need to actually make the run as early as you can. And the more production you get from the guys you trade for, the better. If you're in a head-to-head league and you're, like, running away with your division or clearly in first place and six teams make the playoffs, you can wait. You can be patient. You can wait and see what your biggest needs are. Make sure no one gets hurt, whatever, before you start buying. But most, I don't know, maybe that's not true. Maybe not most leagues are. Maybe most leagues are head-to-head. Most of my leagues are not head-to-head. So in most of my leagues, the earlier you buy, the better.
Yeah, especially if it lines up nicely where you see who's coming up on your schedule. And if it's somebody low in the standings and you feel like you're willing to pull the trigger, take their best player. Trade for their best player. That's all just gamesmanship, and now you, instead of facing that guy, you get to have him potentially for a two start week or whatever it might be. Head to head is very much like you got to make moves to continue to compete in a head to head, at least categories league, from my experience. And now's as good a time as any to get your feet wet.
Speaking of head to head, it's probably time for us to talk about our head to head heroes for the last week. And I'm going to go first on this. This guy, unfortunately, he didn't finish the week, and he's apparently not going to play for a couple days because he injured himself.
Oh, you stole mine. I already know who you're picking.
Who are you going to?
You're about to tell us all about Evan Carter.
I am.
Yeah.
I can come up with another one. I can switch it up. I've got another one in mind.
No. You go through Evan Carter. I'll respond.
It's worth talking about Evan Carter, though.
Yeah, I think that's why we both chose him.
So Carter, over the last 6 days going into Sunday, when he's not supposed to start anyways because he banged up his wrist. It doesn't sound like an IL stint is coming, which is good. But 3 home runs, 2 stolen bases, 8 runs, 7 RBIs, a .556 batting average. Yes, that does come with a .500 BABIP, but when you're that's just, you know, that's how it works when you have a .556 batting average. But Evan Carter was a hot prospect not that long ago and had that super fun start to 2023. Only 23 games, 75 plate appearances, start to his career in 2023, I should say, with a .435 wOBA. Yes, it was a .412 BABIP. Last year, had some injury issues, 45 games, 162 plate appearances, 9.3% walk rate, 26.5% strikeout rate, 278 wOBA, but with a 227 BABIP, where you're like, it's not, you know, the ex wOBA was only 281. It's not like he was setting the world on fire and just getting bad results, but like a 227 BABIP is, that's low. He has, you know, in addition to the hot week he just had, he's played 21 games. He has 68 plate appearances since coming back up this year. He has 4 home runs. His next home run will tie his career high. So he is, you know, assuming he's not headed to the IL now, he should set a career high in home runs pretty easily. He is walking at a 10.3% rate, which is up from last year. And the most important thing I see right now is his strikeout rate, which, as I said, 32% as a rookie, 26.5% last year when he was, I guess, still a rookie. This year it is 14.7%. That is a huge, huge improvement. And while 68 plate appearances isn't a giant sample by any means, 60-ish plate appearances is when plate discipline numbers start to become relevant. And so you can actually look at that number and feel not good about it, not like, oh, he's going to be a 15% strikeout guy now moving forward, but like that improvement's legit. There's real improvement there that you can sort of count on and trust to be real, at least at some level. Interestingly, he is getting there mostly off of swinging more, it seems. His contact rate outside the zone, like his chase rate's up a little bit, 21.6 last year, 23.6 this year. His zone swing, though, is way up. So he swung over his first sort of two debut plus rookie season, he swung 58.9% of the time at pitches in the zone. This year, it's up to 69.7%. So he is going hard after pitches in the zone. He's also making contact at a higher rate. It was 84% over those first 2 years, 88.2% this year. And so he's chasing a little bit more, about 5% more than he was over that two-year period. He's actually making less contact outside the zone, but I don't know if that's a bad thing because contact outside the zone is often not great contact. And so he is what he's doing, though, is he is attacking pitches in the zone at a higher rate than he ever has before, and he's hitting them. He's making contact. And so he's actually getting a higher swinging strike rate than he has in the past because he's swinging so much more. But his called strike rate is down. And so he's not getting into disadvantageous counts nearly as often. And the results are good. He has a new career high max EV. He has a barrel rate of 12%. Now, it's not all great. Like he is swinging and missing a little bit more. That is a little bit of a concern. The average exit velocity of 87.7 is still not particularly exciting. And that 12% barrel rate feels a little bit inflated versus a 36% hard hit rate. That just, it, it's, it's hard to look at that hard hit rate and be like, yeah, he's going to keep barreling the ball double digit percentage of the time. But what it does mean is he's squaring the ball up often. So when he may not be hitting it hard all the time, but he's hitting it in good launch angles often enough that it doesn't matter. It's still leading to barrels. And I think the sort of, I don't know if it's the most important statistic, the most important number I'm going to give you on Evan Carter, but I think it is an important one, is, you know, he feels like he's been around forever because we're talking about, he's 22, right? Like if he didn't have that sort of disappointing season last season, we'd be talking about him very differently. If he had spent the last 2 years entirely in the minors, tearing up AAA, we'd be like, why haven't they called him up? He'd be a super hot prospect right now. And we wouldn't be like, oh, you know, he's 25. It's a late, like, he's 22. So I'm very, very intrigued by what Evan Carter's doing. I'm not quite sure I'm ready to look at this and be like, yes, he's going to be the star I thought he was. But the change in swing profile, the change in strikeout rate, there's enough there that I'm like, the new max EV, that I'm super interested, and I'm trying to pick him up where I can.
Yeah, he's worth scooping up in almost every format, I'd say, at this point. Outfield, like, it's not going to take much for him to become a top 30 outfielder, right? And most people are playing in five outfielder leagues. He's easily worth a pickup in those formats. I mean, take this for what it's worth, because over the same time period that I'm about to give you, which is the last week because it's head-to-head heroes, over that time period, Willy Castro has a 95 mile an hour average exit velocity. So, like, take this with salt. But Evan Carter's is 94.7. And, like, part of the issue, if you want to put it that way, with Carter during his age 20 and age 21 seasons was that he isn't impacting the ball all that hard. But over the last week, he's absolutely doing that, in addition to the gains and strikeout rate, which you already cited. So, yeah, I mean, I'm excited about him. He's a classic. This is like a prototypical, this is a hang it up in a museum example of a post-hype sleeper. This guy was going as like a top 100 pick or whatever the hell it was last year or the year before. I can't remember. And then it was just like everybody just forgot about him. He was sitting out there in free agency in my 16-team league. Like, that's a keeper league. And all of a sudden, at the old age of 22, he has late bloomed into somebody who could potentially be useful. So I'm with you. This is a pretty easy call. I'm excited about Evan Carter.
Yeah, and I think I mentioned that he's squaring the ball up often, and I realize that now with the bat tracking stuff, we have that's like squared up percentage. That's not really what I meant. So I want to clarify. I was really talking about his launch angle sweet spot percentage at that Savant tracks, where he has a 38% sweet spot percentage. The MLB average is 33.2. Now, he doesn't quite qualify to get a percentile, but you can tell from that those numbers, like, he'd be in a high percentile, like that, like he'd be pretty far up there. And so when you're hitting the ball in that sweet spot often, you sort of think about like your classic, I don't know, Wade Boggs, Tony Gwynn type guys. Now, those guys, you know, the strikeout rate for Carter still has to come down to be anything near those guys. But like, those were guys who, when you think about how they hit, it wasn't that they punished the ball all the time. They weren't, you know, they weren't sticking with that era. They weren't like Jose Canseco or Mark McGuire, just like mashing the ball. But what they were doing was constantly hitting it in ideal launch angles, which made it hard to field, right? And so you end up with high average. And Carter looks a little bit like that, even if that exit velocity over the last week doesn't stick around, even if he is sort of a not impact the ball kind of guy. If he can avoid strikeout rates and spray line drives all over the place, that's going to play. And if that is, if we are seeing a breakout in his ability to impact the ball, which we might be, right? It's not just what he's done in the last week. It's the new career high max EV. Like, that max EV of 111 point whatever I said is good, like legitimately good. That's not just some like, oh, he set a new high and it's up to 104. Like, it's up over 110. That's a good place to be. And so like, that's a good thing to see. He is still one of the faster players in the game. He has a 93rd percentile sprint speed. So he should be able to steal some bases. He should be able to turn some singles into doubles. Like, there's a lot to like with Carter. Yeah. And the other thing with, you mentioned being sort of this classic case of a post-hype sleeper, but I'll repeat that, like, he's just 22, right? Like, the fact that he's post-hype is because he was so good so young that we got super excited about him as a, like, a 20-year-old. Yeah. He, you know, oftentimes post-hype guys are like, oh, maybe they finally figured it out at 24, 25 years old. Like, he's still a kid. So, yeah. Nothing not to like. I'm in. I'm excited. Did that buy you enough time to think of someone else?
Yeah, I've got somebody. It's going to go in the opposite direction. Somebody who obviously had a monster week, but who I'm not excited about, who I think actually can be cut in a lot of leagues. But I guess if you haven't cut him yet, then you're probably not going to after this most recent week. And that's Willy Adames, who both hosts on this show have long been a fan of Willy Adames. He's in the first year of a super extension with a super contract with the Giants. Big contract, first year of the new team. Sometimes that goes poorly. We all know the deal with Giants Stadium. It is a pit, especially for right-handed batters. To the left field foul pole is 339 feet, and it only gets deeper, obviously, as it goes on. And for a player like Willy Adames, that can be devastating. So let's actually start with what he did this week. Over the last week, Willy Adames went 6-for-19 with 3 homers, which is awesome. He didn't steal any bags, which is something that very recently we've been able to lean on him for, but no stolen bases this week, which is great. So let's give him his props there. I'll also acknowledge that his BABIP this year would be a career low. Not by much, but it is a career low. His barrel rate is still really good. We'll take an 11 point whatever it is percent barrel rate. Like, kind of under the hood, it doesn't really look that different. However, in one key spot, it does. And that's his pulled air percentage, which is way down. And it makes me think that he is trying to live up to and I'm going to draw a narrative here out of thin air, that he's trying to live up to that contract. And he knows he can't maybe just live off pulling fly balls to left field anymore because it's so deep in San Francisco. It's the third worst park for home runs for right-handed batters. And so he's maybe trying to spray the ball too much. I don't know, but it's weird because if you look at like the batted ball, or not the batted ball profile, but the plate discipline stuff, like he's chasing less and he's making less contact outside the zone, which to me is a good thing. He's being a little bit more selective in the zone, but his contact in the zone is up. And it's like, all right, if the contact in the zone is up, most things under the hood look good. He should be fine. So I guess I'm going to leave with a sliver of hope that Willy Adames can turn things around here just because of what it looks like under the hood. But I wouldn't underestimate. Look, I don't know where they rank as a team. And I know they're tied for first place, or after last night, they're a game back. The Giants offense sucks. It just does. So like, I don't have a lot of faith in a player who is a late bloomer to begin with. Just signed that monster contract, is in a lineup that I don't think is very good. And if it has been good to this point, that's great. I don't expect it to be very good going forward. I think it's a bottom half of the league offense, most likely, and is in a ballpark that is not good for his swing. And he's clearly maybe not changed the mechanics of his swing, but at least has changed his approach. And I don't want to see that pulled air percentage go down. I don't care what stadium you're in. I want that pulled air percentage to stay high. Keep doing it. Nobody is banking on batting average from Willy Adames. So if he hits, you know, 230 instead of 250 or whatever he was at before, we'll take that as long as we can keep the power and keep the speed. But he's changed maybe too much. And I just think it's going to be a lost season for him. And maybe he's going to be a nice buy low candidate outside the top 200 in drafts next year, where you can maybe start to get a little bit of that back in the second year of the monster contract. I think he's lost despite the nice week. And again, I don't know if I already said this or not, two of those 3 home runs this week came in cores. So, like, I'm really not going to get that excited about Willy Adames' big week. But if you had him in your lineup for Lord knows whatever reason, he had you a big week.
Yeah, I mean, his rolling ex-WOBA has gotten much better over the last, I don't know, couple weeks. It's more than just, like, almost last month it's been trending up. And so I sort of believe there's some signs of life here. But if you go look, like, he isn't pulling the ball more now than he was earlier in the season. Like, he does seem to have made a conscious decision to avoid pulling the ball because he doesn't think it'll be as effective. But like, if you look at his hits spray chart, his homers to left were generally not cheapies. right? And so I don't know, like I'm looking at his hit spray chart from last year overlaid on Oracle Field. It is Oracle Field, right? Is that what it's called now? The Oracle stadium Park. In San Francisco, Oracle Park. And like, I don't know. There are, I'm not sure I see any home runs on this spray chart that he would have lost. And that may not be perfectly accurate. There's other reasons, like San Francisco, the marine layer, and it's on it. It's like it can be hard. Like the ball may not travel as far there. There's other reasons it's hard to hit there other than just the depth of the wall. The wall is deep. But I kind of agree with you. I think he's just sort of overcompensated. Like, just do your thing, man. Like, go up there, take your hacks like you always have. Try to pull the ball out of the park like you always have. And see how it plays out, because I think he'll be more effective that way. But I think I have to agree with you, though, that, like, I don't know, this week might be the time to try to trade him. Like, maybe there's someone out there who, like, sees this as a turnaround rather than a cut. They see it as a turnaround and think, like, yeah, this is the moment to trade for Willy Adames. And if you can sell him, I think I would. I don't know. It's interesting because, like, under the hood,
his numbers under the hood this year still look good, though. Like, they look fine.
But the XWOB was actually quite bad. It's the barrel rate that is still good. Yeah. He still has like good plate discipline. He's not walking, or he's walking a ton. He's striking out more than you'd like, but not a ton. Like, he's still been very good in the field, which is also a huge part of his value, and at least keeps his, I mean, the contract keeps his job safe anyways, but that, you know, safer. Because he's still doing a big chunk of what the Giants signed him for. But I don't know. I guess I want to see him just ignore the park a little bit. I don't know. The other thing here, by the way, since we, you know, every time we talk about bat speed stuff, I feel like I have to caveat it by being like, we have no idea what any of this means yet. We're still figuring this all out.
But this can't be good. Like, losing almost 2 miles an hour, he's lost, is just not a good sign.
He's gone from 73.6 mile per hour average last year to 71.9 this year. His fast swing rate was 33.2% last year. It's 21.4% this year. Even if you go back 2 years ago, his average bat speed and his fast swing rate are down. That seems at least a little concerning. And I think this is another one, though, where, like, you know, I say we don't know what this bat speed stuff means. Like, is that aging decline? Does it suggest an injury that's causing issues? Or could it be related to the fact that, like, he's not trying to pull the ball as much? He's trying to spray the ball more. He's taking a different approach, so his swing is a little bit different. Like, does all of that stuff cause him to just not go up there trying to smash the ball? Right. And like, he's just not unleashing his A swing as often as possible because he's trying to go the other way, trying to take advantage of the big outfield. Like, I just don't know. But it is a concerning thing. It's, I don't know. The more I dig into Adames, I the more I feel like he's not a lost cause. I think that we will see him bounce back at some point. But I do sort of agree with you that, like, it just may not be this year. He may need a full off season of, like, sitting down with whoever his personal hitting coach is and, like, getting to the bottom of what's going on and trying to refine his stroke and blah, 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 all that stuff. I think that might be where Adames is headed. And I think, like you said, he might be a buy low in the off season going into next season. But right now, I think if you could sell him, I would.
And that kind of, like, he's not a lost cause, and like, he is a guy who is an elite. I mean, he was an elite player last year. Usually I'd say, like, well, hold on and just see where it goes, because, you know, he's coming off a hot week. Shortstop is just so deep, and we, like, Jeremy Pena, Jacob Wilson, Geraldo Perdomo, even, like, at this point, Willy Adames or JP Crawford. Like, I feel like he's, if he's not performing, like if this week he goes back to going, you know, he's 1-for-16 with a 40% strikeout rate over the next week or something, he's a cut at this point. So I agree there. He's not a lost cause, but I'm ready to move on.
Yeah. And we're going to move on to a quick ad break. When we come back, we're going to talk about some trades that have been going down across our leagues. Welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast, Chad Young and Pete Ball with you. Mentioned at the beginning, it's trade season. Trades have really heated up. Pete, I was just going through and looking at a bunch of my leagues, and like there have been a big increase in the number of trades over the last 2 weeks, basically since the start of June. And so I thought we would go through some of those and talk about what those trades were, what we think of them, do they make sense. I thought we'd start with our Keeper Cut Listener League on Fantrax. This is our head-to-head league. I don't know if there's been any movement in the Roto League yet. I'll have to go look at that in a minute. But there were three trades since the start of the month in the head-to-head league. And start with, well, let's start with the one I made, and it relates to another one. So we'll get through all of these. But I'd been selling in this league. I traded Austin Riley for Nick Kurtz and Shane Bieber right before we got to June. I was sort of thinking I was just done. My team had a really bad record and was down low in the standings. I have since moved up to eighth place, which is still not great. But the team in fifth is also below 500. So there are only four teams over 500 in this league right now, which means a couple of things. One, it means there are four pretty dominant teams. There are four teams that are just head and shoulders better than everyone else right now. But it also means that the playoff spots are sort of up for grabs. Like I'm only three games out of a playoff spot despite being in eighth place. And so when I started to talk to the team in fifth about what he might want to buy from me as I was in my selling process. And he's like, I don't know that I want to buy. I don't think my team is very good. And I was like, but you are in fifth place. And he basically was like, I don't think I can win. And I want to be smart about where I'm going. I'm like, all right, fine. I get that. I can understand that rationale. But if he is thinking about selling out of fifth, well, now my eighth place is maybe only two spots out of a playoff spot, or three, you know, one spot out of a playoff spot instead of two. And so I ended up trading with him in a deal that isn't, it's not really a pure buy or sell for either of us. It's a moving around of assets, I would say. I gave up Chase Meedroth, who I picked up as a free agent and will be a last round keeper next year. Chris Sale, who I kept as a 21st round pick, so he'll be a 20th round pick next year in this one. And my 15th or sixth, my 15th round draft pick. I got a 10th round draft pick, so I moved up six rounds in the draft. His Jason Dominguez, who was a 27th round pick, so he'll be a 26th round keeper. I don't even know if he's going to be a keeper, but I still believe in the upside with Dominguez, so fine. And O'Neal Cruz, who he took in the 10th round, and therefore will be a 9th round keeper for me next year. Cruz, obviously the prize in this one for me. My offense has been bad. I have pretty deep pitching. I don't have a ton of offensive keepers. And like my offense in this league, two catchers. So Wilson Contreras and Gabby Moreno, Josh Naylor, Max Muncy the younger, Brett Beatty. Now I've got Cruz. I've added Nick Kurtz as well via trade. Carlos Correa, Joe Adell, who knows what he's doing. Kerry Carpenter, Dominguez, who I just picked up. Brenton Doyle, who's been a huge disappointment. Luis Robert, who's been a huge disappointment, except for on stolen bases. Max Kepler, Andre Jimenez, Tim Tawa, and Evan Carter. I also have Noelvi Marte and Yordan Alvarez on the IL. It is not a good offense by any means. And there aren't a lot of exciting keepers there. Like, Kerry Carpenter is a cheap keeper. He's probably, you know, that's fun. I picked up Evan Carter. Maybe he turns into something. But O'Neal Cruz gives me a legitimate top tier offensive talent keeper that I desperately needed. And so that deal for me, I think, makes me better this year because my pitching is, I still have Robbie Ray and Logan Webb at the top of my rotation. I have Shane Bieber and Kyle Bradish coming back to help that rotation. And then I've got like Tanner Bibee, Tyler McGill. I've been sort of streaming another spot. I've got Roki Sasaki, although I think I'm going to end up cutting Sasaki because he was like a fourth round pick. He has no keeper value to me. And he's not, I don't know that I want to rely on him this year. So I may just let him go. But like I have enough pitching to feel pretty good. And my bullpen in that one, by the way, is Edwin Diaz, Trevor McGill, Mason Miller, Tanner Scott. It's like, I've got a team that can do pretty well in the pitching categories, I think. And I just need to re-strengthen that offense. I don't know. That's how I felt about that trade was basically O'Neill Cruz is just such a valuable piece for me, given my team construction, that it was worth giving up Sale, even though I think Sale, his keeper value at the 20th round is insane.
Yeah, the keeper value on Sale is definitely insane. But I mean, you know, Chris Sale is 36, 37. So at any moment it could go. As much as I love Chris Sale, and it doesn't look like it's going anytime soon, I'll give him that much. Mydroth, whatever. I don't think he's that valuable in this format. So to me, like, you got an elite offensive keeper who's a lot more expensive than Chris Sale, but he also probably should be more expensive than Chris Sale in this format. So like, I don't,
right.
And it should be also pointed out, this is a five outfielder league. And you got two outfielders who could potentially be keepers, one who's definitely a keeper. I think that's a big deal.
Yeah.
And you moved up five rounds. So I think, yeah, that's a good trade. What I took from this chat is that I shouldn't sell. Like, I'm a game behind you, and I don't know what's been happening to this team. It's kind of ironic because we were talking about this a little bit before the show. I'm the reason this is a daily league. Like, when we made these leagues, like, I was like, I want it to be daily, and Adam wanted it to be weekly, so we kind of split the difference. We made one league weekly, one league daily. And the fact that this is a daily league has absolutely killed me, I think. But I still think my team's really good, and it looks like Marcus Semien's come around. I got Carlos Narvaez for, like, a buck, which I think is great in a two-keeper league. I'm now kind of changing my mind. I don't know. I have a pending trade. I'm not going to blow things up, say who it is or the player, but like I would be getting an elite keeper, like maybe the best keeper in the league. I'd have to look at who all the keepers are. I'd be moving up eight rounds in the draft, and I'd be getting a top three prospect for my farm system. The problem is, obviously, I'd be giving up Aaron Judge. I would also have to give up Zach Wheeler in this trade. So I'm like, that's a huge long-term boost, but it would destroy my season. My season would be over at that point. So I'm kind of on the fence on that. To go back to your trade though, which is what we started with. I think it's a good move for you. I don't think you're going to, if you lose the league, it's not going to be because you made this trade. And so long-term, if you get better, I think that's great.
Yeah. And I think it makes sense for Tyler as well, who felt like he desperately needed pitching. And now he can, we talked about Sale, and we also talked about Robbie Ray, who's a similar keeper cost. He might be like a 17th round draft pick, so like a six, like a little bit more expensive. He decided he ended up wanting, I think he decided he wanted the cheaper pitcher. And I do think, like, I tend to, with keeper leagues, like, I don't look at like a 5-year time horizon. I'm looking at like, you know, 2 years, 3 years, maybe. Right. So like the fact that, like, to me right now, the most important thing with Sale is he's a keeper this offseason. For sure. I mean, you know, barring catastrophic injury, knock on wood, he's a keeper this offseason. And so, like, for him, he's added an ace. And so I think this trade to me feels like a pretty good win-win. Yeah. That's all.
Real quick, going from, like, Sale as a keeper to Robbie Ray, and you're like, oh, he's a little bit more expensive. You were right. He's a 17th rounder. Some of the other names that went in the 17th round were Walker Buehler, Lucas Giolito, Jake Cronenworth, Connor Norby, AJ Puck, Michael Toley.
Yeah.
Like, it's not a, who cares? At that point, Robbie Ray is a slam dunk keeper just like Chris Sale is. It really doesn't matter.
No, and it's not that Ray isn't a slam dunk keeper. It was just more the, like, that 17th round pick is still slightly more valuable than a 21st round pick or 20th, you know, it'll be a 16th next year and a 20th or whatever. For Sale, like, yeah, there's some value in being four rounds higher. And so I get that piece. And as much as you want to be like, Sale's old, it's not like Robbie Ray is the picture of consistency where you're like,
I'd rather
relying on him forever either.
No, you're right.
Yeah. So I think it makes sense. And that trade as well, like I had originally, he just asked for a shortstop back. So Mydroth was he just needed a guy who could play shortstop because that's where he had been playing Cruz. And I had originally was like, oh, I'll give you Daniel Schneeman, who I have him. I don't even think I have him anymore. I think I've cut him since then. I was like, I'll just throw him in. I don't care. And he was like, I think I would rather at least take a shot on Mydroth. And I was like, that's
fine.
So we ended up negotiating the deal. But I think Mydroth is at least interesting as a like speed and average guy, depending on how things play out for him. So I think it was the right move for him to take that guy as his gamble rather than Schneeman, who's really just roster filler. The other trades that happened in that league, another one that involved that same team that traded me Cruz. He also traded away Mike Trout and Jose Altuve. He got Gleyber Torres and Justin Steele. Steele, I mean, he's going to be out most of next season, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's a tough one for me.
I think he got the internal brace, which might mean he's back a little bit quicker, but still, even if he got the internal brace instead of the full-blown surgery, he's still going to be out for a while.
It's an interesting trade because he gave up Mike Trout and Jose Altuve to get Justin Steele and Gleyber Torres. Torres is a 10th round pick, so 9th round keeper. Torres may play his way into being a keeper there. Possibly, like it's hard to know what his draft value will be, but like he's getting on base at iClip, he's hitting some home runs, he's got some steals. Like Gleyber's having a bounce back season and should get into a better park next year because that was just a 1-year deal he signed with Detroit, right? So I like picking up Torres there. And the reality is Trout, like Altuve's been so bad, although he's turned it around a little bit lately. Trout has not been what we hoped he would be and has been hurt. And neither of them have any keeper value because they were second and third round picks. And so there's a part of me that's like, I would rather have Torres and maybe Steele, especially, you know, you may find out in the offseason, like Steele's targeting a May return or something like that. Okay. Then he becomes a keeper. You stash on your IL and that's not bad. I wonder if he could have gotten more by waiting a little longer on Altuve and Trout to perform. But I think if I'm selling, I would rather have Steele and Torres than Trout and Altuve. Like Trout and Altuve have no future value. So I don't hate the trade. I do think he maybe could have done a little better a month from now. But then again, a month from now, Trout's season could be over. So who knows?
Yeah, I've gotten in trouble in the past in this because people don't like when we criticize their trades, but I hate this trade. I don't like this trade. I think.
Do you?
I do. Yeah. If you have a piece like Trout or like Altuve, I mean, granted, look, maybe he's like, these guys are so old at any minute, they're going to get hurt. I have a chance to get two pieces that I'm going to keep. It's a 9-keeper league. I respect it on that front. I would have aimed a little bit higher and I would have waited. There's no reason to rush. And I do think Trout, especially lately, when he's played, he's been awesome, right? I mean, the batting average was low, but like we all know that's not going to stick. I mean, he might not bat for a high batting average, but he's not going to be a 200 or whatever he was hitting before. And Altuve, the dual eligibility, I think things are only going to get better for him once Yordan comes back. He's getting a little bit more used to the outfield. I would give up one of those pieces, maybe. Like if I was really like, oh man, Gleyber's definitely a keeper, and I love Justin Steele. I think he's going to be back sooner rather than later, and I'm going to keep both these pieces. I could see maybe giving up one of them, not both though, not both.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, I'll say this: I have Trout and Altuve in my CBS head-to-head league, and they're incredibly frustrating right now.
Sure.
And so I think there's an element here. Now that league I am competing and I could not trade them for pieces that would make me better right now than they are kind of trying to make me. So I'm not looking to trade them, but if I got an offer, I think there's probably a good 20% discount on their value I would take just to have them off my roster.
Really on Altuve too? He's been He's been pretty good lately.
He has been better lately. He's been good lately.
He's better in almost every category than Glaber. Not that that's the point. I mean, you're obviously selling, so you don't really care who's better right now.
Right.
It's not like Glaber is... He's having a nice year. He's not, like, amazing.
He's not setting the world on fire. Yeah. I just... Maybe at this point I'm okay just holding Altuve. It's just they have been such a challenge for my roster construction.
Okay.
And setting lineups and stuff. Like I went through a period of time where I was like, Altuve qualifies at second and outfield and I can use him at neither. Right. Until like the last few weeks. And now it's been better. And now I can use him at either. And that's good. And Trout is just, half the time he's just eating up a roster spot. And so I get wanting to move them. I do think that he could have waited another month and maybe gotten more value, but I get it. And I think if he got two keepers, I think that makes sense. The other deal that happened in this league since June 1st was Matt Heckman, one of our fellow pitcher listers, traded away Christian Campbell for Bryce Turang. Now, Campbell was a 12th round pick, so he'd be a 9th, a 10th round, or 11th round keeper. I think this is a one round up, right? I can't remember. He might be a 10th round keeper, but 11th, 10th round keeper. Turang is a 22nd round pick, so he's a, you know, he's being kept a full 10 rounds later. Matt Heckman is one of the teams that's running away with this league. Like he's in first and by a lot. And so this is not,
there's no, I mean, maybe running there's some away thought towards in head to head. There's no running away with the league.
He's running away with the regular season. We'll say, right. Like he is going to probably lock down a bye. Like if you had to guess right now, he's going to get one of the top two seeds. He's going to get a bye. Yeah. So I would imagine this for him is about this year, not the keeper value primarily. Does this feel like selling really low on Christian Campbell?
No, I don't think so. Campbell can end up being a stud, but like, I think Bryce Turang deserves some love here. Like he was on everybody's bust list. Like because of the second half he had last year, it was like, let me come at you with who my busts are. I'm going to tell you Bryce Turang. And that was like every podcast in America that's about fantasy baseball. So he has proved everybody wrong. The average exit velocity for Bryce Turang is way up. Did we ever think he'd have a 91.2 mile an hour average exit velocity? He's more than doubled his barrel rate. The strikeout rate has gotten worse, but if that's going to come with increased power and impact on the baseball, I'm fine with that because the walk rate's also gone up. So like from a real baseball perspective, if the Red Sox were like, oh man, we got to trade Christian Campbell for Bryce Turang, I'd be pissed. But from a fantasy perspective, especially for a team that, like you said, is looking to win a championship this year, I think Bryce Turang is way more likely to contribute to winning a championship this year than Christian Campbell is. So I just don't think the keeper consideration is a part of the equation, which maybe it should be with a prospect as elite as Christian Campbell. But Campbell has shown a lot of warts at the major leagues that he's going to have to work through. He's going to have to iron out, whereas Turang is just off and running, literally. So I'm okay with it. I don't think it's necessarily a bad deal.
Turang, I mean, I see the exit velocity. I see the improvements there. Like I said, like you mentioned, he is striking out more. He's also walking more. And so, you know, he's been a little bit more patient. He's not chasing as much. And so there's some positives there in the plate discipline, despite the increased strikeout rate. It's only got four home runs. So like he's impacting the ball more. His ISO is down from last year. His ISO last year was 0.95, which is already not a good ISO. It's down to 0.078. I don't know. I mean, he looks like he's going to score more runs probably and drive in some more runs. But like he's on a pretty similar home run pace, pretty similar stolen base pace, which I think like from a, hey, we thought he was going to be a bust and he's not a bust. He's this, but like, unless you think there's a lot more power, like displayed power in game coming beyond that, the exit velocity is signaling at, the biggest thing with him right now is just his BABIP is up. That's it.
But that's still pretty important, especially for a player of this profile. There's a fine line. I think we saw it last year. Like things can go south for him really quickly. And if the exit velocity is up, like that should coincide with a higher BABIP, which is good for your team. So like, I'm not saying that Bryce Durang is all of a sudden some like 20 home run hitter, but it was easy to see why people thought he was a bust, because there wasn't anything under the hood that looked good. But now you're telling me he's on pace for similar numbers last year, which made him an elite asset for half the season. And at the end of the year, if it was a roto league and you played him the whole year, he was just an elite player for you. And you're telling me he's improved under the hood. I wouldn't be surprised if things start to get a little bit better on the surface. And even if they don't, he's more likely to maintain what he did. Like if these were his numbers under the hood last year, I don't think people would have been claiming that he's some bust. So I think if anything, he's adding a layer of validity to what he did. And look, 50 stolen bases, that's a high mark. Like he might not get there. And at the end of the year, you might look at his final numbers and be like, they weren't even as good as when he had worse Statcast data. But again, it's adding a layer of validity to him being someone who is not this one, or not even 1 year wonder, half year wonder that he was. And again, to bring it back to the trade, unless he has a second half that's like last year, I still think he's more likely to help Matt win a championship than Christian Campbell will be this season.
I think that's probably true for this season. I just, to me, it felt like selling low. Now the 12th round draft cost on Campbell this year makes like,
oh, I if didn't he had been that much, I figured he was a prospect promotion. Oh, then I like this trade.
No, because you know, because the thing with Campbell is that he, you know, he sort of broke out last year. So at the beginning of the season, last season, when we did our prospect draft, he wasn't being drafted. So nobody took him in the prospect rounds last year. And so he was a free agent going into this year and got picked, you know, in the 12th round. So
that makes sense.
It limits, like if he were a last round keeper, that'd be a really different story. I think in terms of his keeper cost, I still think he's the more interesting long-term player, but
oh,
I
hear that's you. For sure. Yeah. I'm not going
to. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to switch over to looking at the Fangraphs staff league in Auto-New and a bunch of trades that have gone down there. All right, welcome back to the Keeper Cup podcast. We're going to try to go through these trades a little bit quickly. I feel like this is it. This is how I come back from every second break. Every time we do our second ad break, we come back and I'm like, oh man, we only have a few minutes left. Let's try to get through as many things as we can. And we never do, but we're going to try anyways. I'm going to say it again. Fangraphs Staff League. This is League 13 in Auto-New. It's a head-to-head points league. This league goes through these spurts of activity. Like there were very few trades in the offseason until January, and then there were a bunch, and there were a bunch of trades in April, and then there was nothing until June 9th. And from June 9th to June 11th, this league made 5 trades in 3 days. And that's just the way this league seems to work. Let's go over what those trades were. We're going to start with the ones that I wasn't involved in, and we'll come back to the one. We'll finish with the two that I was. The first trade, I think this is sort of a fun trade, but two teams swapped a $30 Adley Rutschman for a $9 Logan Ohapi. And the team getting Ohapi is 6-16, last place third division, probably out of it. The team getting Adley is 8-14. Last in their division, but 2 games closer to maybe making the playoffs, I guess. So it's sort of a fascinating deal where you would think, like, you hear this trade and you're like, oh, cheap Ohapi for expensive Adley. Clearly someone is buying. But I'm not entirely sure that's what's happening here. It looks like it's sort of just a challenge trade. It's just one team thinking a $30 Adley is a better piece than a $9 Ohapi. What do you think, Pete?
I don't know. I think the most likely outcome is both of these guys end up being cuts, which I know is an aggressive thing to say about an Ohapi who's only going to be $11 given the nice-ish season he's had so far. Like, look, he has 14 homers. That's really exciting, especially out of a catcher who's only 25, who people have liked in the past. But I'm sorry, a 34% strikeout rate to a 4%, not even 4% walk rate. Like, if you want me to spend $11 on a guy, he's got to do better than that in the plate discipline.
No, in Fangraph's points context, he's at 3.88 points per game.
Yeah,
like he's been bad, and part of that is he has been ice cold. His last 10 games, he has negative 16.6 points. That is hard to do.
But like we say, and part of that is if you're going to strike out that much, you go through slumps like this. He's going to have weeks where he averages like 13 points a game. But that's
right. He's going to hit four home runs in a week. Yeah. Yeah.
And
Adley, on the other hand, at 4.1 points per game, hasn't been much better, but he is at 73 points over his last 10 games. So he has really turned it on lately. I think my read on this is that Rutschman helps this year. He's like, if you're betting on one of these guys to have a strong second half, they might both have strong second halves, but like Adley's the guy you want if you're trying to fight your way back in. And I think that if the team that traded away Ohapi feels the way you do and is like, I don't even know if I'd keep him at $11 anyways. If you're swapping two non-keepable catchers, then I think Adley's the one you want. But I do think that Ohapi, like, if he can bring down the strikeout rate at all in the second half, he becomes an interesting keeper.
He could, yeah.
So that was that trade. The next trade that went down, this is a lot of names, we'll say. I wanted to call it a blockbuster, but like, it's really just a very large trade. So, one team, and let me see where these teams are in the standing. So, one of the teams is the same 6-16 team I mentioned before. The other team is Eno Saris's team, which is in first place, has both scored the most points and has the best record in the league so far.
Yeah, well,
so,
Eno's whooping his ass this week.
Yeah. Are you?
Yeah, I'm going to get back up to 500. Nice.
There you go. So Eno added in this trade. He got a $13 DeGrom, an $8 Tyler O'Neill, a $15 Class A, and a $1 Cedric Mullins. He gave up a $1 Abner Uribe, a $7 Jason Dominguez, a $10 Jordan Walker, and a $1 Jack Leiter. And at first I was like, oh man, there's DeGrom in here in Class A, but like Class A is actually like, he's under 8 points per inning. Like, he's been kind of not good this year but in this format. DeGrom had that weird zero strikeout game right around when this trade happened. And it was like, oh man, is he broken? Like, what's going on here? But he seems fine. O'Neill and Mullins are, I mean, O'Neill he's still hurt, isn't he?
I don't know if Mullins is. I thought O'Neill came back and then got hurt again. I have him in zero of 21 leagues.
So. Mullins is healthy and Mullins is playing well. I just don't know. Like, Mullins is at 5.29 points per game. That's the best he's been since the 2021 breakout season. I just don't buy it with him. It's like, when I look at this deal for Eno, I think, like, assuming DeGrom is healthy for him for the playoffs, DeGrom and Class A are the ads here. And I think giving up Uribe, Dominguez, Walker, and Leiter to get those two is good. And Mullins and O'Neill could be good depth options in the outfield as well. They don't hurt. But I think it's like, it really is to me about DeGrom and Class A here. For Carlos on the other side of this deal, I made that trade for Jason in the other league. I still think Jason Dominguez has another level in him. Jack Leiter has shown signs, and I know that I'm going to get laughed at for this, but before he got hurt, Jordan Walker was hitting better again. He had finally started to put together a little bit of a stronger performance. I don't know that what that means. It could just be like a 2 week sort of hot streak he had. But he's also still just 23. Like, he just turned 23 at the end of May. And so I'm still like, I understand wanting to take a gamble on him when from May 17th to June 14th, almost a month. Now, it was only 34 plate appearances because he wasn't playing that often. And then he got hurt and blah, 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 all that stuff. That June 14th game, by the way, is his first game back from the injury yesterday. But it was basically, you know, 8-9 games before he got hurt and then one game after. He has a 165 WRC plus over that stretch. It's a lot of BAPIP. And so, you know, who knows if that continues. But his average exit velocity is up to 97 over that stretch. Small sample. But with a guy like Walker, you're looking for these incremental improvements that show that he's going to be able to unlock what he's able to do. The problem with him here is he's $10. And I have a couple leagues where I've cut him, and now he's at that 30-day cycle where I can add him back, and I'm adding him back for like less than $5, and I'm intrigued again, which is probably something I shouldn't admit, but I did.
Oh, everybody's just going to hate me after this episode, which is fine. We got a show to do. I hate this trade. I don't like this. Jordan Walker would have to hit 40 home runs in the second half for me to keep him for $12 at this point. I think it's a sell low on Emmanuel Clase, even though, you know, like, he's not a guy who strikes out a lot of people. So that will probably keep his points per inning pitch down relative to your Edwin Diaz's, et cetera, et cetera. But he's still a nice piece to have. He's reliable. Those saves count for a little bit more than holds, obviously, which makes him one of 30 guys who's, you know, less than 30 guys who's pretty valuable in that regard. And I don't. If I'm going to give up a $13 DeGrom, like, if I'm selling, I understand wanting to trade DeGrom. Obviously, the dude can't stay in the field. He's pitched like six total innings since I was 12 years old, and he can't stay in the field. But he's pitching well right now, and he's only $13. I would feel more of a rush to trade him if I had like a $32 DeGrom, and I was like, all right, he's got an ERA under three. Like, this is the time to move him. I could see him being a pretty good keeper next year for 15, even if he gets hit in arbitration, a couple more dollars, and you got to build your team from somewhere. I just don't think you're getting the pieces back that warrant a $13 ace who's pitching like an ace. I hear what you're saying with Dominguez. He's still been really bad, and he's not a dollar. He's seven, so he's going to be nine. If he does have a decent second half, he might get a dollar or two in arbitration. Now he's an $11, $12 Dominguez. Like, is that it? And the other two pieces, I just don't see it. So, all these people I'm criticizing, I'm sure you're ahead of me in the standings. You're doing great. Please don't get upset. I just, on this one, it's another one where I don't know. Now I'm shifting how I'm thinking about my own teams because I'm getting ready to sell in a few leagues. And the two trades that I made that we're not going to get to, but I sold, I feel really good about those. These, though, I feel like if people waited, they could have got more, especially for like a $13 DeGrom or an underperforming Mike Trout. So I'm not a huge fan of this one.
Right. Well, Carlos wasn't done. He made two more trades. And the next one, I think you might like better.
I hope I do.
I don't know. it's another weird one. So in this one, three of the guys he gave up in this trade are a $1 Brad Keller, a $1 Gabriel Arias, and a $3 Ben Joyce. I don't think we have to talk about those three. And for a team that's selling, you get rid of those guys. Who cares? Fine. Gone. See you later. He also gave up a $73 Shohei Ohtani. So that's obviously what Robert, who made the other half of the trade, was going after. To get Ohtani, he got a $1 Jose Caballero, who I don't think matters, and I think we can ignore. A $1 Noah Cameron, who is interesting, maybe. I don't think a big deal here. A $5 Addison Barger, who looks pretty good and could turn into a keeper if he can keep hitting. But then the two big pieces here, a $13 Michael King and a $10 Lawrence Butler. And this, to me, does feel like, I will tell you right now, Robert had reached out to Niv and I about Juan Soto and had not offered us, because we had asked for King and Butler for Soto. And he said no. And I think we were right to make the ask. I think he was defensibly right to say no. You know, King being hurt changes the calculus on him quite a bit, obviously. He went and made that trade and, you know, this trade for Ohtani instead, and basically gave up more to get Ohtani instead of Soto. I can't argue with that. But I like this trade, I think, on both sides. I think, like, if you're going to trade a guy like Shohei Ohtani, go get, like, King at 15 and Butler at 12 next year are locked into your lineup as valuable, low cost, high point contributors. That's the kind of return I think you should be looking for. And on top of that, like Barger and Cameron in particular could play their way into being keepers for sure. I think Cameron, I wouldn't bet on Cameron. He's not the guy I would have picked there. But I like Addison Barger. I think he could be a keeper at $7. Like it just depends what how the rest of the season goes for him. Yeah, I think like this deal to me feels like a win-win. Now, part of that is, like I said, I was basically willing to make a slightly smaller deal to get to trade Soto for a little bit less than what he got, what he gave up for Otani. And so I'm predisposed to think it makes sense, but I think it makes sense.
Yeah, I like this one. I understand how good Shohei Otani is, obviously, because I'm reasonably understanding the game of baseball, and it's pretty clear that he's pretty good. But at 75, I don't know if I want to keep any player at $75. And like, I wouldn't put it past Otani to somehow get tagged in arbitration as well. So he is an obvious, you know, if you're selling, you sell him. And yeah, you got multiple keepable pieces. I'm a little worried about King. I am 30 years old and late bloomer to begin with, has had arm trouble throughout his whole career. And now he's out with a shoulder issue. I realize like he just like slept on it wrong or something, but he's not going to be back in the minimum. That kind of gives me some concern, but the contract is so good.
Yeah.
And the player is so good when he's healthy that I do like that. And then when you put it in the context of the other trade where it's like, okay, I'm getting a lot younger and potentially a lot more upside by replacing Jacob deGrom with Michael King. I like that a lot more. And now these are starting to make more sense to me. And I'm not just saying that.
It happened at Wordsworth. They happened 12 hours apart.
Yeah.
Right. They were clearly being negotiated, sure, overlapping each other.
It's a context obviously matters. Lawrence Butler, kind of weird where like we're all expecting this breakout and like under the hood looks pretty good. The whiffs and the strikeouts are still bad. And the strikeouts are even worse than they were last year, where somehow they weren't that. Man, he had a really weird year last year. But the point is there's upside. He's 24 years old. He's already put forward a monster fantasy season, or you know, not a monster fantasy season, but what was pacing out to be a monster fantasy season. So
yeah,
you're right. You get two pieces that you get to lock in there. And I'm with you on Barger. I think he is a keeper. Like if the season ended now and you're like, you know, keeping a $7 Addison Barger, I think I might. Everything looks so good for him. His max exit velocity, 116.5. He's averaging 93.9. The strikeout rate's improved. The walk rate's up. He's getting a lot more play time. The barrel rate's crazy right now at almost 14%. He's pulling the ball in the air more. There's a lot to like right now with Addison Barger, who isn't coming out of nowhere. There were a lot of people in the know who really liked Addison Barger when he first made it to the major league. So when you add that piece in, I really like this deal. I think it now makes the other one make a lot more sense in that context.
The other two deals that went down in this league, both involved myself and Niv Shah, my co-manager, making deals. The first one, as I said, we had been going after King with Soto. So, you know, looking for Butler and King for Soto. When that other trade happened, Carlos put King on the block pretty quickly and reached out to us. He's looking for cap space, and we have a ton of cap space. And so we traded him a $1 Joe Boyle and a decent amount of cap space, $10+ of cap space, for a $13 Josh Naylor and that $13 King. And this was one where I was just like, Naylor's been good, King's been good. I get that he needs cap space, and we're going to give him more cap space than he could get even by cutting these guys. But Boyle was, I think, an easy give up, even though I really like Joe Boyle.
Man, I'm really going back and forth here because I hate this one. I would keep Naylor and Michael King at $15 each. I know Naylor's numbers have kind of been down this year, especially in the power department, but he's also still like a top five first baseman or something so far this season. Like, and that lineup is so good and so young. I really don't like this trade. I would have kept both of those pieces. Now, like, Joe Boyle has a lot of upside, and apparently he's figured out the walks in the minor leagues. He made that one spot start, looked brilliant. I don't think he walked anybody in that start, and then they sent him back down because they're the freaking Rays, man. But they also have a lot of pitching.
I know.
I wouldn't be surprised if Shane Boz, I think he's going today, if he continues to pitch really poorly, maybe there's a little flip there. Boyle comes up, Boz goes down, I don't know. if I'm doing this trade, I'm giving up these two pieces who are not only, these are not rentals. They're both keepers. They're underpriced keepers for one player. I need a lot more than cap space and Joe.
Well, one player and the cap space. I do think the cap space is undervalued in this league in general. Like other leagues, I mean, cap space is really hard to come by. So I do think there's, I don't think we should undervalue the cap space, but I agree when he said he would do this deal. You know, every once in a while you get a trade offer where you're, when you have a co-manager where you're like, sometimes I get a trade offer where I have a co-manager. I'm like, I can reject this without asking Niv because I don't care what his opinion is. There's no way I'm doing this. It's very rare that I get a trade offer that I'm like, man, if I can't get in touch with Niv quickly, do I just accept this? And like, so I don't risk the other manager getting a better offer. Like I don't miss out on this. Right. Cause like, you never know when you like someone makes you an offer and then 20 minutes later, somebody else accepts a similar offer. Right. Like, so this was one that when it came in, I was like, Niv, I need to hear from you soon. Cause I'm going to take this.
And to be fair,
and then he was on board.
To be fair to Carlos, cause this is him in all three trades. Like, yeah. I hated the first one, but then it made sense with the second one. I hate this one, but let's see what he does with that $10. Because if he's like, you know what, I want to scatter this across six or seven prospects that I have my eye on, and three of them end up being worth keepers, well, that really changes how this looks, right? Like you didn't give up those prospects, so it really works out for you. But he was now able to do that. So I just want to be fair. I feel like I've upset a lot of people if they listen, so don't be mad.
The last trade that we're going to talk about real quick, Niv and I made a trade with Jake Mailhot, who also writes over at Fangraphs about Auto New. We traded away a $37 Francisco Lindor and a $9 Alec Bohm for $2 Ronnie Mauricio, $1 Kyle Stowers, $5 Connor Norby, and $4 Bubba Chandler. This deal took like a weird path to getting into shape because he wanted Lindor and we wanted Chandler was sort of where it started. And then we needed more than Chandler. So we started talking about Mauricio and then like Stowers' name came in, but he was like, well, if I'm also giving, cause we felt like it was just not quite enough. He's like, well, I'm also giving up Stowers. I could use a third baseman back. No, he wanted it wasn't a third baseman specifically. He wanted either Alec Bohm or Jeff McNeil. And we looked at both those guys. We're like, man, neither of these guys are like, McNeil's been great. Bohm's been better lately, but like, they're both sort of borderline to be keepers, depending on how McNeil's season goes. And we're like, oh, okay, fine. We can figure that out. But like, we could really use a corner or a middle infielder back because we're short on middle infielders. And he was like, well, what about Norby? And I still kind of like Norby a little bit. So I was like, yeah, fine. And so it's sort of like Chandler, Stowers, and Mauricio were really the targets for us. Lindor was really the target for him. Bohm and Norby just sort of came in late. I think Bohm for Norby shifts the deal in his direction, but I don't think it did it enough to not take this trade. I feel pretty good about this return for a $37 Lindor. As good as Lindor is, and as much as I like him, and I like, you know, as a Guardians fan, I still love Francisco Lindor. I'm super excited about Bubba Chandler. I really like Stowers, and Mauricio looks like he could become, not in real life because he's not as good a real life player, but the fantasy version of what Ben Zobrist was, right? Just available all over the field, produces for you wherever you want to put him in the lineup. And for $2, like that's a really nice piece to have.
Yeah, I actually really like Mauricio. I imagine Stowers was more important to you in this trade than Mauricio was, but I'm more of a fan of Ronnie Mauricio.
I mean,
Stowers only $1, like even as somebody who's not a huge believer in him, like how can you deny that he's $1? He's going to be a keeper almost no matter what at this point for $3. Like if just the stat cast data stays the same, even if the results don't improve that much or keep going, I should say. But I like Mauricio. And I mean, look, if you're going to trade a $37 Francisco Lindor, if you're going to sell, you want to get elite potential pieces in return, and getting the number two pitching prospect in baseball is not a bad place. And like right now, people who are waiting for Bubba Chandler are kind of stressing out because he's walking the yard. He's walking everybody lately, but you don't care because this is a future move. The stuff is still there. So does it really matter if you're trading away Lindor and not getting an elite current MLB piece in return. You don't care if Bubba Chandler is up this month or 2 months from now. It really doesn't matter. I think this trade is fine on both sides. I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps a $39 Francisco Lindor, but a $39 Francisco Lindor might not be as good as a $5 Bubba Chandler next year. So, you know, we'll see.
Yeah, and that was the thing is, for me, it was, you know, I want, when I'm trading away a guy like Lindor, any star player, I want elite upside, and I want some level of floor. I want something back that I'm like, okay, this guy will provide me value. And Mauricio and Stowers have crossed into that world for me where I'm like, these guys are going to, they're going to have value. Like, I can count on them as keepers. I can feel good about putting them in my lineup for next year. And then Chandler gives me that elite level upside. And so I really liked that combination. I don't know if Norby's going to be anything. We'll find out. I'm happy to have Connor Norby to let the season play out and see what he does. But
a $7 Norby is almost definitely going to be a cut.
The other piece of this, by the way, is that as we were debating McNeil versus Bohm, which one we'd rather give up, you had Royce Lewis on the trade block. And I was like, I think he's just trying to like sell Lewis while he can. I'm going to offer him, like, let's see if Pete wants a couple of prospects for Lewis, because we have a ton of prospects. We could have found a good prospect value for him. And you're like, nah, I want guys who can help me this year. And now Royce Lewis is on the IL.
It's a shocker. The whole reason I made him available anyway is because I have this lovely problem of Eugenio Suarez, who, like, I added last year for a dollar, and I almost rode that dude to a championship. So, like, if he's just going to keep hitting the way he's hitting, then Royce Lewis isn't going to see the field for me. So, like, it is frustrating because here we go again with another injury for Royce Lewis, and I'm beginning to give up on the health of this guy. It almost feels like Alex Kirilloff with different injuries, where it's just like, maybe it's just not meant to be. But fortunately, it has no impact on my starting lineup because he was not someone who was starting for me anyway.
No, and he'd been finally starting to turn it around too. He's not just been injured this year, he's been really bad.
Yeah, he's been awful.
So there's been that piece too. And that was why I thought, like, maybe we can buy low. We can give you a couple of prospects that you're interested in that you might be able to flip for something else. And we can sit on him and see if he really does turn it around and stay healthy for the second half and decide if he's a keeper at $12. But man,
yep,
he's going to be out for a bit. And so
once again,
really makes it hard. Once again, anyways, we've gone long enough. Pete, I know you got some yard work and got to go visit some fathers. I've got to, you know, go spend Father's Day with my kids. So, thank you all for listening. We will be back with you next week.